The Underworld War by Aaron Dembski Bowden. Read by Jonathan Keeble. We are supposed to know no fear. These are not just words. To know no fear is the core of the bioalchemical secret worming its way through the invisible threads of our genetics. We are born to fight and die, never knowing fear. We understand it. We endure it. We conquer it. But we never suffer it, and thus we never know its true taste. Fear is nothing more than a biological reaction, a physiological curiosity that afflicts lesser beings with various degrees of cognitive impairment. This is merely the first step. First, one must know no fear. Next comes the conviction of courage, giving one's life to the absolute purity of purpose. To rise into the ranks of the Legiones Astartes means casting all else aside. Your family is dead. Your youth is meaningless. As far as the galaxy is concerned, you were never born. You forfeit any lingering pretensions of humanity. One warrior is nothing. The Legion is everything. You have to live by that code. You have to embody those words and ensure every indrawn breath is devoted to making them true. As a space marine, you are no longer human. You are a legionary, beyond the concerns of mortality and into the genetic purity of the transhuman. You stand clad in your legion's colours, carry your legion's symbol, and serve your legion's lord. You wield weapons forged in your legion's foundry fires. You live and breathe and sweat your legion's culture, drawn from your legion's home world, manifested in your legion's traditions and rituals. Above the legionary is the squad, the pack, the claw, the unit, the cell. Above the squad is only the legion. This is strength. This is duty. Duty must blunt all other emotion. The legions are weapons, nothing more. Warriors forged for war, no different from a ploughshare melted down to become a sword. Swords know no fear and feel no emotion. They do not pine for the days of tilling the soil in peaceful fields, nor do they break before the first blow is even struck. The legions and the once humans that make up their ranks are the same. But the human mind is never a clean sheet. Even taking a child's mind, before the realities of life teach a man to settle, to compromise, and to know his limits, a wealth of lore already colours the mind's canvas. We are not mindless weapons, and a divorce from humanity does not mean we are wholly inhuman. Humanity is our foundation, a limitation to be built upon. Therein lies the perfect strength of the legionary's form and function. The Emperor, for all his ignorance, got so much right. We are the weapons the human race needed to lay claim to the stars. Neither human nor inhuman, but something beyond both. Transhuman, or post-human, as some of the scribes say. Or perhaps once human is closer to the truth. However, as with anything touched by humans, the process is not without flaw. Some minds resist the ascension from boy to legionary, and some things are carved too deep to simply be planed away while forging the psyche of the perfect soldier. Sometimes too much of the man remains inside the soldier. These are the unlucky and flawed, the chaff that falls from the wheat, imperfect cogs in the perfect war machine. Most never last long enough to stand clad in ceramite at all, let alone march beneath the Imperium's banners. The legions are brutal flesh factories, and their trials cull the weak from the strong. To be Legiones Astartes, you must know no fear, and live a life of absolute duty to a greater ideal. Perhaps in the future, There shall be some refinement or alteration of the process, something that steals the underlying humanity that forms our foundation. If so, I would not envy the diminished generations that would follow us. For now, there is no sure way to murder the human spirit at the heart of every warrior. Only a fool would want to. But I am not certain the lords of every legion would agree with me. Handwritten treatise, author unknown. Out of ammunition and out of luck, Kortal knew he had finally reached safety when he found the firelight. The light of a humble wreckage fire caught the silhouettes of the living and the dead, painting their shadows across the cave walls. The humans were hunched, spindly things, thinned by malnutrition, bent over by wounds and weariness. Most were ravaged by radiation burns long before they had made it down into the tunnels, and they bore the mark of Kauth written in pain across their deteriorating flesh. Their shadows were careless marionettes, stunted and graceless as they danced across the stone walls. Kortal's own image, a towering warrior with a helm crested by twin horns, showed a stark, dark grandeur that he no longer felt. His shadowy avatar displayed none of his armor's battle damage, nor any of the weariness that sank through his body to the bone. The connection feed sockets running up his spine were aching drill holes that cried out for tending. The same feeds along his shoulders and chest, where his armor linked to his gen-hanced physique, were punctures in his flesh, pulling raw with every movement. He knew exactly how long he had been here. He knew it, despite the fact he lived in a world with neither day nor night, because his eye lens's runic display kept track of every hour, every minute, every second he spent down here in the dark. He had lost his own bolter 6 years and 246 days ago. In that time, he had carried another 13 bolters, looting them from the fallen and inevitably losing them again when the fighting was at its most savage. For several moments, he watched the shadow play performance sliding over the ancient rock. His own image mocked him as it flickered against the cavern wall. Winged, horned, the sight his enemies saw, the sight his enemies had seen for almost 7 years.
"Lord," the pack of scabbed, bloody wretches called to him. "Lord, great Lord, please, your blessing, Lord."
Incredible. Desperation had them believing he cared about their lives. Kortal ignored them all, moving to the hulking figure at the rear of the cavern. More of the dregs and survivors scattered before him, their shadows dancing across the walls in devilish haste. The figure greeted him from the darkness, doing him great respect by acknowledging him first. Its eye lenses were the same blue as the drought season sky above the city of grey flowers, back home on Colchis. It stood in the motionless drone of active armour, its helm tusked, its great shoulders speaking of monstrous, inhuman strength. To Kortal, it was merely a warrior in cataphracty plate. To the humans that served it, it was a killer made in the image of a hunched and long-forgotten primate godling. Its voice was a vox-growled expulsion of thunder on the horizon.
"Jerudai Kortal," it said. "You still live?"
Kortal nodded with a hum of his own armor joints.
"So it seems."
The Terminator lifted a ponderous claw. It might have been a welcome.
"And so our paths cross once more," it said. "On the 2440th day."
No surprise that Thule cited the exact day as well. They all counted the days. It was how the word-bearers greeted one another.
"Are you the last of the Twisting Rune?"
Kortal was not sure. He had seen none of his chapter in weeks. Exactly 51 days, to be precise. And those he had found had been bodies going to rot in an otherwise abandoned cave.
"I believe I might be," he admitted.
"We should speak."
The Terminator was silent for several seconds before replying.
Then speak.
Not here. Cortle gestured to the slaves. The two word-bearers moved further into the cave and into a tunnel leading away from it.
Thule, he said to the Terminator, how do you tolerate them? How do you endure the whispers and the weeping night after night? Their prayers scrape my ears.
The Terminator trudged through the deeper blackness, its heavy tread giving an echoing rumble. The only light was that which they brought with them, the ice-burn blue-white glare of their eye lenses. Onwards they walked into the silence, breaking the serenity with bootsteps on stone and grinding armour joints.
"Do we not deserve their reverence?"
Thule asked. He had the voice of a scholarly avalanche.
"And do the gods not deserve worship?"
As Quartle walked, he let his gloved hand trail across the jagged rock wall.
"The gods have abandoned us," he said, "as has Lorgar."
Thule's tusked helm gave a rattle of vox that sounded like a slipping gear wheel.
"Blasphemy, brother, from one of the exalted Gal Vorbach?"
Quartle's laughter was dry in the dark.
It has been more than half a decade since Cor Faeron fled. 7 years of these tunnels lit by ritual fires and the muzzle flash of enemy bolters. 7 years of smelling the salt stink of human sweat and the spicy musk of leaking sores growing from radiation burns. Lorgar is not coming back for us, Thule. He was never coming back for us.
The sun still bleeds poison into the void.
Kalth's surface may be lethal to life, but the ebb of a dying sun hardly threatens a rescue fleet, shielded against the radiation.
Thule rounded on him.
Rescue is a coward's word, Gerudai.
Call it whatever you wish. Would our lordly father even need a fleet? He hears the warp's song. He weaves it and rends it with the ease of silk. Why not carve reality open and come to our aid?
There was a pause as Thule mused on this.
You drank from the blessed sun's wrist and tasted the divine blood. How can you, of all the legion, bring this blasphemy to me? What madness incites you to walk this holy darkness and speak such heresy?
Speak the truth, Quartle quoted without a smile, even if your voice shakes.
The Terminator trudged on. Quartle allowed the silence for a time, but he was not the most patient soul ever to wear the red of the 17th.
Have you noticed that after 2 years even the empty tunnels smell of blood?
Thule grunted acknowledgement, but said nothing more.
Your servants have been mauled. Quartle prompted.
Yesterday, Thule replied.
The 13th hit you hard.
Harder than you realize, said Thule. The blood you're smelling is mine.
His warplate was as ruined as Quartle's, as ruined as every word-bearer stranded on this dead world of cavern cities. The scent of leaking life could be coming from any one of the charred ruptures in the thick plating. He tapped an armoured fist against his chestplate, breaking the silence with a steel drum clang.
One of my hearts has stopped beating. The other labours even now. I may have a few days remaining to me, but no more than a handful. The gods only know what's burst inside me.
There was another long silence before Quartle spoke again.
I have been moving through the underworld, fighting when I must, but more often merely watching, waiting, learning.
Thule regarded him with soulless eye lenses, awaiting an explanation. Quartle gave it with a sigh.
I have been counting the dead, taking heed of all that now lie lifeless.
Thousands of the Ultramarines have fallen, the Terminator said.
His voice was sincere enough to make the words an avowal.
Perhaps tens of thousands.
I am not speaking about counting them, Thule. Another pause. Cortle could almost hear Thule's thoughts, whispering and clicking with displeasure.
I'm going to the surface, Cortle said at last.
Thule turned his tusked helm to the other warrior.
To go to the surface is to die.
For you, perhaps. I am Gal Vorbach. My blood is poison. My touch corrodes flesh. I have eaten nothing but ash for over a year.
He showed his gauntlet, the red ceramite ridged and knuckled with bleached skeletal spurs. The same growth showed across his warplate. His bones had been hardening and pushing through the ceramite as the months passed in the dark. Surprisingly, the pain had been nothing more than a dull throb, no different from the muscle aches of daily training. The Terminator gave his passive regard.
You believe the demon inside you renders you immune to the radiation of a sickened sun?
Not an easy question to answer. The demon within him had been silent and unreachable for months. He was half convinced that his last battle with an Ultramarines librarian had somehow left him depleted, perhaps exorcised, was a truer word, with the divinity flayed from his flesh. The Emperor's lapdogs were beginning to realize the value of the forbidden Librarius once more.
I believe we'll see soon enough.
Cortle's wings gave another shiver. Closed tight to his back, they were a worthless cloak of thick-veined, folded, leathery membranes. He had not flown in months. Few caverns were spacious enough to allow such freedom.
But why the surface, brother? What awaits you there?
The dead, Cortle replied. I intend to live. I will escape Kalth, even if I am the only word-bearer to do so. And I will remember who died here. I will make the Legion remember.
They already remember. We cannot leave until the war is won.
You are deluding yourself.
Cortle lifted an arm, where a beaten iron star medallion was bolted and hammered into the ceramite of his forearm.
Where is the graven star?
He turned his hand, showing a ritual engraving of a sinuous serpent.
Where are the asps of the sacred sands?
He reached to his chest plate, where a ruined parchment showed the faint signs of a red palm print.
Where is the flayed hand? I will tell you, Thule. The graven star are dead. The asps of the sacred sands are dead. The flayed hand are corpses at the bottom of a pit, skulls leering up in silent laughter at their fate, lost to an ultramarine's ambush. How many of us remain? We lead starving weaklings in a war with only one end. The 13th will destroy us, and our own legion will remember none of it.
Cortle turned his pauldron as he spoke, showing the mangled sigil of the twisting rune chapter.
How many chapters have died down here, Thule? It has been 7 years. Where are your brothers?
He gestured to the snarling demon face on the Terminator's shoulder guard.
Where are the rest of Hol Beloth's men?
The two word-bearers stood in the pregnant silence, saying no more. To Cortle, the dark cavern was a manifestation of every other cave. It embodied every night spent down here in the lightless, blood-smelling black. Thule finally spoke.
You truly mean to abandon the Legion, Jeredi?
They abandoned us, Cortle replied. Lorgar isn't coming. The Legion has left us here to die. I'm going to the surface.
You are damning yourself to apostasy,
the Terminator growled a Colchisian command, and blades lengthened from their housings on the back of his oversized gauntlets.
And you know I must kill you for even voicing all this,
admitted Thule. Cortle nodded.
I know you must try.
Bad secrets always tended to be buried the deepest. After leaving Thule's cavern, bloodstained and even more battered than when he had arrived, it took Cortal almost a month to reach the surface. The journey was not an easy one. The underworld war raged, as it had raged for almost 7 years, in brutal spits and spurts, filling the caves with the grind of overwhelming violence for several nights, then fading back to give a few hours of respite. Cortal had fought on Istvan V, when the skies burned black from the funeral pyres of 3 butchered legions. Until he had been forced to burrow beneath the surface of Kalth, he had honestly believed Istvan to be the pinnacle of what was possible in war. The apostate walked west once he abandoned his brothers below. Always west, towards the setting arc of the poisoned sun. Its swollen, blue malignancy stained the sky, cancerous in imagery and in the realities of its radiation. He was sweating inside his armour, in the places where his armour had not yet become his skin. Where his flesh had fused with the ceramite, he either did not need to sweat, or simply had not encountered conditions vile enough to bring about a bodily reaction. Sometimes he coughed up blood, expelling it through the maw of bestial teeth his helm's mouth grill had become. That was not the radiation. That was just his body adapting. The ghosts of Kalth fought as he went west. They paid him no heed, for they were mere memory, and he was iron and blood and bone. The apostate word-bearer heard their shouts and cries, seeing the dead warriors as flashes and flickers at the edge of his vision. He listened as they waged a war both sides had already lost, reprising their roles from the day this world had died. When he did not walk, he flew. Before Kalth, his wings had been beautiful things, a swan's pinions, white-feathered and clean. The underworld war leached their health, shedding feathers like autumn leaves, accelerating the change as the demon within exerted its influence over his genetic code. The swan's wings had become something bony and bladed, a spread of leathery flesh with thick veins in lightning bolt patterns across the silken membranes. Stronger now, without a doubt. More useful. Stronger, but stranger. They smelled of animal musk, and they sweated blood. Stretching them felt no different from holding one's arms wide. Despite the weight of his armour, beating them 3 times was enough to lift him from the ground. He could not fly for long, though, for the effort sapped all strength from his muscles, but once high enough he could glide for an hour or more. He did not sleep on his travels. He had evolved beyond the need for it, even beyond the slack limits of his regenesis among the Legiones Astartes. He no longer needed to eat, though thirst was ever a plague. Dehydration thickened his tongue. Swallowing his own saliva was a blessed but false relief. Sometimes he would swallow his own blood. He journeyed across the unending plains, crunching the blackened husk of vegetation beneath his boots. An ocean of unharvested crops, dried and rotted from the dragon breath heat of an irradiated sun. On the 9th day of his journey, he walked through a dirt storm. Solar radiation tortured Kalth, toyed with it, making a mockery of its weather patterns. The apostate saw the horizon darken with the coming maelstrom, a tidal wave of earth dust and tormented soil. He prepared for it as it rolled down from the western mountains, though those preparations consisted of nothing more than folding his wings tighter to his back. Instinct made him reach to check the conductive strip of mag-locking metal that bound his bolter to his thigh. But he reached for thin air. He had lost his last gun long ago. When the winds howled their highest, and grits clattered against his ceramite armour in a ceaseless gravelly barrage, the apostate trudged on through the darkness, blinded by the dust of this violated world. He could all too easily imagine that the planet hated him, as if the world's soul sensed the last defiler upon its surface and wheezed its last dirty breaths to spite him. He knew war, and he knew how warriors died. How many slipped into death with a final curse on their lips? Kalth itself evidently was no different. He reached the first graveyard on the 11th day. This was why he had come to the surface. This was why he was here. Someone had to remember. The graveyard owed nothing to the stately order of rural cemeteries with their rows of stone tablets, and resembled even less the sand-blasted menhir henges of Colchisian burial grounds. Here was carnage spread thick across the churned earth. Tank hulls rotted in the sickly light, darkened by rust, giving infected teeth leers from their corroded dozer blades. The bodies were mummified in their sundered armour, cracked open to desiccate in the wounded glow of Viridia. Quartle hiked through the slain, seeking the sigils carved and burned and sculpted onto shoulder guards. On every red-armoured corpse the same grey-painted skull glared. Its mouth was an iron lock, closed to silence all speech. The unspeaking. The unspeaking died here, annihilated beneath an ultramarine's counterattack. These bodies were not from his chapter, then. The unspeaking were warrior sages to match any others, stilling their tongues with proud, proud oaths of silence. Quartle respected them, but had little to do with their works. Among the word-bearers dead lay hundreds of ragged skeletons clad in shreds of cloth and dirty rags. The unspeaking's faithful followers, no doubt. After nearly 7 years in the tainted sun, they were little more than husks. But he knew that if he had chanced upon this gravesite in the hours after the battle, opening their slack jaws would reveal tongueless maws, a display of the unspeaking's ritual mutilation for its oath-sworn serfs. Quartle took two things from the unburied dead. The first was a bolter, graven with kill markings and patchy with corrosion, but proven functional after a test shot sent a shell pounding into the armour plating of a nearby rhino. He felt no guilt at breaking the silence of this massacre site. He could not inflict any greater indignity upon them than that which they had already endured, baked to the bone by a fouled sun. The second thing he stole was a talisman from around a warrior's neck, a simple necklace of cheap bronze with the warrior's name, squad designation and chapter symbols scripted in Colchisian cuneiform. A rare token. The habit was much more common among the lesser soldiers of the Imperial Army, with their identification tags necessary for collating casualties. As if anyone would care about the management of mere human corpses in a war led by the legions. He tied the trinket around his wrist and walked west, leaving the first graveyard behind. He reached Danehold 3 days later. The city lay in dust, a skyscape of toppled towers and dead spires, with streets torn raw in the wake of tank treads. The chasm scars of orbital bombardment were graven deep across the city's fallen districts, where lance fire raked its way across the population centres and slaughtered the city before it even knew it was under attack. He had fought here after making planetfall. He had fought his way through the burning city, throwing himself at ultramarine shield walls or firing back from behind barricades of tumbled rock and ruined bodies. The running firefights had none of the claustrophobic choke so omnipresent and overplayed in the underworld. Bolters had fired that day without echoing against the confining stone. How good it had been to fight freely. He had even flown, spreading his wings to soar above the embattled streets, firing at will on the helpless warriors below. But that was then, and this was now. Quartle ventured into the city, making his way down the silent roads, walking around shattered tanks and fallen buildings. Spires still rose in ruined grandeur, their sides blasted open to the light of the lethal sky. Bodies were skinless, sinewless bones, many fallen onto the rock-crete ground in reach of inactive lasguns and solid-shot rifles. Many more had died unarmed, huddled together or alone, some with their remains scattered across roads or plazas, others squatting in corners or ducking under cover. Perhaps instinct had sent them fleeing and scurrying in those last moments. Perhaps they had died when the sky rained fire, or when the War Master's allies brought Kalth to heel with bolter and blade. Mere minutes into the city, he found his first word-bearers. Cortal thudded to the ground, boots cracking the rockcrete as he hit, and bunched his wings to his back. The avenue was a scene from some visionary's sketch of a pre-Unity mythic hell, with ultramarines and word-bearers gone to the bone within their armour, spitted by spears and making barricades with their own bodies. He walked amongst the dead, letting his fingers brush delicately over their broken ceramite. One ultramarine was nothing more than powder and armour fragments beneath the fell blade's treads. A lone armoured arm reached out from beneath the dead tank as the only indication that a warrior had died under there. One of the word-bearers was lanced thrice through the chest, pinned to the stone wall of a habitation spire. 400 dead warriors, and the bones of their war thralls at their feet. A low hum pervaded the scene, setting Cortal's teeth on edge. Some of the dead Space Marines' suits of armour were still active after all this time, still thrumming in tune with their back-mounted power packs. It was one corpse in particular that most drew Cortal's eye. He approached it with a certain confident caution, the way a medium might prepare to make contact with the restless dead. The slain word-bearer's armour was decorated with gold runes, god sigils on arterial red, the markings of the inscribed. Cortal knew the chapter well.
"Hello, Jayavash," he said to the impaled captain.
Jayavash did not reply. Jayavash did not move at all. Cortal reached up to his brother's helm, unlocking the seals of the dead warrior's collar. A serpent's hiss of vented air pressure allowed the helmet to come free, and he looked upon the dry leather skull that had been Jayavash's face. The smell of decomposition, freed at last, was a gaseous corruption intense enough to make Cortal's eyes sting. As a child on the streets of the City of Grey Flowers, he had seen bloodfly eggs burst open in the belly of a dead dog. This smell was the same. He had evolved past disgust, but not past the bite of bitter memory.
"You died badly, Jayavash."
His tone stole any possibility of the words being a question.
"But then, doesn't everyone?"
The skull stared back, its hollow eye sockets neither knowing nor agreeing, merely pits to display the absence of life and personality. Cortal let the helm drop to the road, and reached for the ornate dagger sheathed at the dead warrior's hip. More god runes marked the rusted blade. Another memento, another chapter to remember. He turned away, stretching his wings and bunching his muscles to leap skyward.
"Cortal," said the corpse behind him.
A year before Kalth, in the days that followed Istvan V, Cortal had been summoned to the Fidelitas Lex. He had anticipated delivering a report on the Twisting Rune's casualties from the killing fields, or perhaps a briefing regarding new recruitment to ease the savage losses that they had sustained fighting against the Raven Guard. He had, of course, assumed wrong. He had actually been summoned to his death. Argal Tal, the Crimson Lord, was already spoken of in whispers across the fleet. He and his men, the so-called Blessed Sons, had shown the truths of their divine forms. They were God-touched, no longer human or legionary, but a sacred bonding of flesh and spirit, possessed, in the crudest terms, ascended by any other judgment. The Crimson Lord waited in the funerary chambers aboard the Lex, watching servitors raise bronze and marble statues of those slain in the recent massacre. Argyll Tal wore the red ceramite not yet adopted by the rest of the Legion. That would soon change, as they armoured themselves in arterial crimson before the betrayal at Kalth. His face was the dusky tan of all desert-born word-bearers, and his eyes showed a repression of emotion that danced somewhere between unshared pain and unreleased anger. He spoke softly, calmly, but it seemed an effort to do either.
"Sergeant," Argyll Tal said by way of greeting.
He spoke in two voices now, his own soft tones and the bass rumble of the thing inside him. Cortal was no longer sure of Argyll Tal's rank since his change, and said as much. That brought a tight, tense smile to the other warrior's lips.
"Gal Vorbeck," Argyll Tal replied. "For now."
The Crimson Lord would soon create the Vakra Jarl, the chapter of consecrated iron. But Cortal had had no idea of it back then. Even if he had, it would still not have aroused his suspicions, not so soon after their victory on Istvan. Argyll Tal said nothing more. He was watching the servitors raise a statue of a slender young woman in a flowing dress robe.
"It's true, then," Cortal ventured. "The blessed lady has fallen."
"Warriors fall." Argyll Tal turned to Cortal, his words punctuated by the slither of lengthening teeth. "She was murdered."
"An ill omen," Cortal said quietly.
"I will not argue with that," the other warrior replied.
They settled into a companionable silence for several seconds, watching the servitors work.
"Why was I summoned?" Cortal asked him.
"Have I displeased Lord Aurelian?" "Far from it. He wishes to offer you a gift."
Something in the Gal Vorbach's tone made Cortal's skin crawl. He repeated the words with measured neutrality.
"A gift?"
"You have a choice."
The Crimson Lord was either deaf to his brother's trepidation or chose to ignore it.
"Lorgar has bid me increase the numbers of the Gal Vorbeck. He desires more blessed sons among both the Kalth assault force and the fleets tasked to spread across Ultramar."
Cortal's breath caught in his throat.
"You can do this? Mesh flesh and spirit at will?"
"The Primarch has asked, and I will obey."
Hindsight was a treacherous boon. All too often, what might have been was tantalizing and worthless in equal measure. 100 questions raced through Cortal's mind in that moment. Questions of blood and pain and the body horror of sharing your flesh with an alien entity. And Argyll Tal would have replied with honesty, for he was no deceiver. He would have spoken of the changes, the wrenching of bone, the boiling of blood, and the madness of two voices sharing space inside one mind. But Cortal asked none of these things. His racing heart refused anything but the fierce rush of temptation.
"And my choice?"
Argyll Tal nodded, knowing in that moment just how this would end.
"You can starve yourself of all nourishment and carve holy symbols across your flesh," he told Cortal, "purifying your mortal form for the union to come. You may then return to me if you hear the calling of the Neverborn from behind the veil. If you survive the ritual, then I will offer you a taste of my blood to begin the communion, and lead you into a new life as one of the Gal Vorbeck. The Neverborn will never refuse such a devoted host."
Starvation. Purification. Trances and visions and scarification. He did not fear the trials, for he knew no fear. Even so, he hesitated at the mutilation of his flesh. What if he failed the offering? What if he could not fully recover? What if he required extensive bionics, even to stand and fight with his brothers in the future?
You mentioned a choice, Cortle prompted again.
I did. You may undergo the necessary purifications, as I have just explained. Or you can risk a cruder, more abrupt offering, and pray the Neverborn deem you worthy for union. That is how the first of us accepted this gift, though we didn't realize what was being offered at the time.
What if I choose the quicker path? Cortle asked.
It is much more dangerous, more likely to succeed, but failure brings death.
But if I choose it?
Argyltal gathered the right words. It was different for each of us. Some saw nothing but blackness, others saw our pasts, and others, such as Zephyn. Argyltal gestured to another statue being lifted onto a plinth. Zephyn saw the future. He saw what might come to pass if the future unrolled along one of its many thousand possible pathways. Cortle needed no time to prepare an answer.
I will walk the same path you walked, my lord.
His eagerness did not make Argyltal smile. Again, with hindsight, that would have meant something. Then, once we are in the warp, I will take you to a specially unprotected part of the ship, away from the tenebrous guardianship of the Gellerfield. You will offer what I offered, and do as I did.
What should I offer? What must I do?
Argyltal drew a golden sword, clearly of Terran make, forged for the fists of the Legiones Custodes. It should not have flared into life in his hands, and yet the blade did just that. Little lightning snakes rippled down the stolen steel. You must offer your life, Jeredi. He rested the tip of the blade against his brother's throat. You must die. He started at the corpse's voice, but Jayavash stood unmoving, unliving, slouched against the wall and pinned by the spears lancing through his body. The alkaline wind rattled against the dead man's armour, with little skitterings of blown grit.
Jayavash, Cortle said.
He knew no fear. There was no unease in his voice. No, none. None at all. A demon living in your blood could not change that about you, surely. He ran his ridged bone spurs in a threatening, scraping caress down the skull's side.
Jayavash, he said again.
Nothing. Just another ghost of Kalth. Jayavash's skinless head tilted and toppled, smashing on the rock creek ground. If it was an omen, Cortle could not imagine what it was supposed to portend. Things could hardly get much worse for the word-bearers on this accursed world. Never before had overwhelming, lightning victory and drawn-out grinding defeat colluded so closely. Power armor thrummed louder nearby. A shadow danced at the edge of his vision. He turned again, feeling his fingers harden, lengthen, the skin retracting around curved claws. Where a human's reaction to unease was seen in an elevated heart rate and the onset of fear sweat, Cortle's body reacted by forging weapons from his flesh, shifting him into the divine murderousness of his killing form. Bones creaked and stretched, flesh ripped and reformed. It was not agony, but nor was it painless. He stared down the deserted avenue, his senses bladed and beast-keen. The bodies lay as they had lain before, and the buildings still stood as silent as kilometre-high tombstones driven into the dirt.
Cortle, came the voice from inside.
The suddenness of it peeled the lips back from his teeth, and for the first time in months he felt a stirring from the demon within, a sluggish sensation, like something turgid in the silt at the bottom of a lake. His blood thickened with it, and the bony protrusions spiking out from his armour gave sympathetic aches. He could feel the presence within, questing with its senses, stretching out tendrils of consciousness and withdrawing them in a lazy recoiling.
"We are no longer within the caverns."
It was not exactly speech. The demon's thoughts coalesced in Quartle's skull only slightly more slowly than his own inner monologue. A conversation with the creature inside was as simple and subtle as the seamless transference of ideas and concepts at the merest whim.
"You have slumbered," Quartle pulsed back, "for over 3 months. This is the surface."
"My wounds force the silence of slumber."
Was there the blade's edge of defensiveness in the demon's thoughts? Quartle was quite sure there was.
"The blue warp weaver is dead."
He recalled the battle. Some agonies wormed their way into the mind, as unshakable as a splinter beneath a nail, and witch lightning tearing at your very soul was one of them. The pain had been revelatory. He dimly remembered laughing, learning, even as merciful grey mist threatened to drown his consciousness, even as his blood boiled in his veins and his second soul had fallen into untouchable darkness.
"The librarian is dead," Quartle sent back. 3 months in his grave, dead by my hand. I have left the underworld war behind."
"I hunger."
"There is no blood on the surface."
The demon stretched itself through Quartle's body, filling his bones all the way to his toes and fingertips. Muscle twitches made his fingers flicker, and his left eyelid started to spasm.
"But I hunger,"
the demon said again. Quartle's teeth clacked together as sentient pain oozed through the bones of his jaw.
"I hunger,"
the demon said again, this time with the word-bearer's mouth. Quartle repressed a shudder, then repressed the symbiote itself. It took focus, but concentration shackled the demon from making any claim over his physical form. Calculus equations always worked best for Quartle. Some of the Galvorback prayed, or simply gave in to their skin-riding demons, letting the Neverborn claim them at will. But Quartle had always suppressed his sacred parasites with the repetition of long-involved calculations. Reciting and solving them occupied his mind, keeping his thoughts free of the creature's passions.
"Our wings hurt, Gerudai."
"They atrophied. We were in the dark too long."
"I hunger."
"Enough. We have a duty up here."
The demon slithered through his veins. He felt it coiling tight around his spine, just as he felt it licking at the filament nerves behind his eyeballs.
"What duty?"
Quartle turned from the headless corpse of his fallen brother, moving away through the urban detritus.
"A duty to make the Legion remember us. I am gathering relics from each chapter that..."
The demon's displeasure came as a jolt of pain in the looping cables of Quartle's bowels.
"Legions and pride and memories and brotherhood. Man concerns, man duties. Let us hunt and feed."
"No."
His interruption was as smooth as the demon's had been, and just as forceful. Quartle's mouth was a mangled mess of ceramite and ivory teeth. He spat blood onto the road.
"No. This matters to me."
Slits gashed open in the side of his arm. 4 new eyes, each one yellowishly reptilian, opened and regarded the dead city. They rolled in their ceramite and muscle sockets, then closed and sealed over. Quartle felt others opening on his shoulder blades and another by his knee. These also rolled and stared before sealing closed in viscous, moist whispers. Something moved under his ribcage. Something else moved in his guts. He sensed the demon's disgust.
"You are hollowed through by cancers. They hang inside you, these black fruits, staining your body with sickness. You would die without me, Gerudai.
This pilgrimage on the surface will see you dead.
The sun is still poison, he sent back.
I can see that better than you, host.
The demon did something inside his chest. There was the grainy, fluid feeling of thick juice flowing across his insides.
I can pulp these black fruits, rip them from their cradles of flesh and bone, and dissolve them into your bloodstream. There will be pain.
There's always pain.
Silence now.
Let me save us from the foolishness of man-pride.
Cortle took 3 steps before his swimming vision drove him to his knees. His legion-granted sensory organs had compensated for any dizziness since their implantation back in his dimly recalled childhood, so disorientation was as unfamiliar as it was unwelcome. Yet he thudded down onto his hands and knees, dizzy as a drunkard, while something serpentine slipped behind his eyes and started gnawing on the meat of his mind.
Your brain is ripe with corruption. It is a wonder you aren't blind.
Cortle felt his fangs clench together, cutting the street's silence with a porcelain squeal. One of his claws broke against the rockcrete, but the aborted talon lengthened fresh from the bleeding finger once more. To his left, half a metre from his clawed hand, a dead word-bearer regarded him with eye lenses the colour of fresh frost.
Brother, he greeted the corpse,
feeling the sick urge to laugh. Its armour was too bolter-blasted to offer any hint of identity. All that mattered were the god runes carved into its ceramite. That much, at least, Cortle would remember and bring back to the Legion. He had Jayavash's knife as evidence. The dead warrior regarded him with its ice-pale eye lenses.
Cortle, it said.
Its voice was the alkaline wind itself, formed of whispers and the clatter of dust against armour.
You have abandoned us.
He had chosen the quicker path, as he suspected every word-bearer offered this rare gift would surely choose themselves. What manner of faithless coward would hesitate in the face of a chance to bond with the divine? He wished to be blessed as the Gal Vorbach were blessed, not spend months in sedate prayer.
Do it, he had said to Argyltal.
He'd even leaned his head back, baring his throat. But the Crimson Lord sheathed his blade and returned his gaze to the statues being lifted into place.
Tomorrow, the other warrior said in his curious dual voice, go back to your ship, Jerudai. Reflect on what I offer, and if you wish to die tomorrow, then I will kill you myself.
He had done as he was bidden. While aboard the Morn Song, flagship of the Twisting Rune Chapter, he had avoided his squad and refused to take counsel with any of his brothers. The chaplain came to him, requesting entry into his meditation chambers, but Cortle sent the warrior priest away with a plea for solitude. The next night, he secured teleportation passage back to the Fidelitas Lex. As dangerous as such translocation was, while both ships were at the mercy of the warp's tides, taking an unshielded gunship would be an act of suicidal futility. When the shrieking, snaking mist of teleportation cleared, Argyltal was already waiting for him. Robed thralls chanted and prayed, while servitors worked at the chamber's edges, murmuring as they adjusted the hand-wrenched, archaic clockwork machinery. Argyltal was helmed now. Cortle acknowledged his lord's presence with a salute, fist over his heart, though they seemed past such mundane forms of address.
You knew I'd come, he said.
Argyltal's only answer was to draw his sword and walk away. Cortle followed. He scrambled to his feet, wings flaring wide, the looted bolter weighty in his fist. Its sculpted muzzle aimed down at the dead body, defying the corpse to move, to speak, to betray any one aspect of a life that it should not possess.
Nerculum,
he said, voiceless and inwardly.
I said to be silent. Do you believe it is easy to reweave mortal matter? Your flesh is weakened from the sun, and reshaping it is causing you to bleed within. Let me work on saving us, Gerudai.
The word-bearer stood in the street, breathing heavily, both hearts beating hard.
You didn't hear that? He almost shouted. I hear the liquid whispers of your straining cancerous organs. I hear them as your reward for abandoning the Legion. Something is alive here.
He kept the bolter aimed down.
Nothing is alive here. The cancers riddling your skull put pressure on your brain and toy with your senses. Nothing more.
That sounded right. It sounded true. And yet it felt like a lie. He was stronger with the demon awake. His senses were more keen, reaching out further. Nothing moved, not on the street, not in the hollow windows of the battered Habspires. He could smell the charcoal corrosion of decaying tanks and the cinnamon aftermusk of long-rotted bodies, the smell of a slain city. The dead were dead. They did not speak. They did not accuse you of deserting your brothers and forsaking your duty. Cortal fired and annihilated the helmet in a burst of scattering shrapnel and bone shards.
Petty, came the demon's voice.
If it was not a spoken word, it was still the closest the word-bearer's mind could come to giving shape to the demon's bored chastisement. For a moment, he stood in the road, looking down at the trinkets and relics bound to his armour. Mementos of fallen chapters, left over after a bitter victory, now languishing outside of the 17th Legion's memory. Someone had to do this. Someone had to make them remember the fallen. 8 years ago, he had stood in one of the flagship cemeteries with Argyltal himself, seeing dead warriors being enshrined in marble and bronze. The slain of Istvan, remembered with honour for their sacrifice. What justice for the slain of Kalth? He would stand before Lorgar and cast the relics of lost chapters down at his Primarch's feet. Nothing else mattered. Not long after Quartal left Jayavash behind, he came across the body of a dead Titan. It was said that the Mechanicus priests fashioned their humanoid war engines to stand in the machine god's image, as totemic as any theist avatar from before Old Night. But the Reaver was much less grand in its morbid repose. A dead machine lying in the dust, all sense of connection to its master's species gone as it lay broken across the churned earth. The kill wound was not hard to see. Rocket punctures pitted and cracked the Reaver's face like cratered acne. The command crew likely had not even suffered when the end came. A flash of flame, an immolated cockpit, and they would be dead before their Titan hit the ground. Quartal landed upon its shoulder, clawed boots digging into the corroded plating. It made a good vantage point from which to look out over the destroyed plaza. Corrosion had eaten deep into the Titan's armour plating, making it difficult to determine the Titan's original allegiance. Dead warriors from both legions lay strewn around its fallen bulk. But a habitation spire had toppled in the avenue to the east, leaving a half metre of dust and debris blanketing the ground and shrouding the dead with ash. Irregular mounds marked the final resting places of countless warriors. It was the closest thing to a real graveyard that the dead on Kalth's surface would ever see. Nurkulum remained silent, presumably working to excise the poisoned meat from the word-bearer's body. Quartal dropped down, wading through the dirt and debris. His red armour turned grey to the waist as he kicked up the dust merely by walking. The first body he hauled from its powdery cairn was an ultramarine, clad in rotted cobalt blue, and he let it tumble back into the dry muck. Dust devils swirled, protesting the irreverent way he disturbed the fallen. The second was also an ultramarine, as was the third. He found a word-bearer, but the corpse's arm cracked from its shoulder when he tried to lift the remains. Brushing aside more dust revealed the faded, greyed red ceramite he had been seeking, along with the emblem across the breastplate. A face, pale against the dark background, shaped as a sorrowful masquerade mask. The chapter of the Iron Veil. Cortle reached down to grip the mask's edges, ready to pry the ivory emblem clear of the armour plating. He thumped a boot onto the corpse for leverage, bunched his muscles and pulled.
Cortle!
The half-buried body choked, like a man gagging on ashes. He released the chestplate, but the dead word-bearer kept rising, dust sluicing from the old armour ceramite, hissing as it slid free. Cortle backed away, claws lengthening, acidic saliva stringing between his malformed teeth. He backed right into something cold and dusty, and just as dead.
Cortle!
The thing behind him rasped.
You abandoned the Legion.
First, there was light. Acid strong, acid bright. It was light at its absolute transcendence, the very apotheosis of illumination's concept, too bright for mortal reasoning. He had only one thought through the dissolving burn of incomprehensible brightness, and that was a simple one. This was death. The light finally allowed other sensation to trickle through. He heard wave crashes and screams, the cries of men, women, and monsters drowning and burning in an ocean of the same white fire that threatened to swallow him. A cracking jolt brought him back into the chamber. Ward runes and their more pervasive counterparts, sigils used to summon, lined the walls at uneven intervals, many overlapping their cousins. Some were cast in brass, others no more than glyphs, knife-carved into the dark iron of support pillars. He reached to grip the blade impaling his chest, his fingers closed around the metal, but he could not pull it free. Cortle staggered, his eyes flowing over the chamber once more. Here was the abode of muttering human priests and chained astropaths, twitching in fluid-filled coffin pods, forced to live lives of endless slumber so others might harvest their eternal dreams. A human soul was a candle in the endless ocean of the warp. A psyker's soul was a conflagration, as dangerous to the Neverborn as it was tempting. It could be harnessed, except that was not the right word, was it? Not harnessed, nor even channeled. No, it could be weaponized. Cortle had never been told this. No one spoke of such things, and he sensed his comprehension was incomplete. Yet he knew all of this implicitly, the moment he opened his eyes and bore witness to the clanking, grinding pods in their captured cargo. He knew it because there was something else inside his head, melting its thoughts into his. With the same ice-lance plunge of lore from nowhere, he knew the taste of a thrashing soul between his teeth and how terror only spiced the flavour.
Nurkulum,
said the something else inside his mind.
You are a weak host, but we shall see how this game ends.
Cortle's attempt to speak left his lips in a gush of blood. Argyltal pulled the sword from his chest in a clean yank, letting the custodian blade's power fields sizzle away the blood marking the metal.
That is my blood, Cortle thought,
watching it bake away into smoke. He fell to his knees, back on board the Fidelitas Lex, but still somehow surrounded by the crashing of waves and the shrieking of souls. He felt his skin sloughing free with the sound of ripping leather. Bones cracked and split and pushed up, up, up through his body. His scream had joined the others, and Sergeant Jeredi Cortle of the Twisting Rune Chapter died upon the deck of his Primarch's flagship. The dead encircled him. Walking in weak-kneed staggers, coughing dust from their helms' rebreather grills. Most carried no weapons. There were few still clung to rusted blades with the tenacious instinct of muscle memory. No denying it now. No claiming it was a hallucination brought on by cranial pressure or the disorientation of radiation poisoning. More of them were still rising from the dirt. Never the ultramarines, only the warriors in red, his own brothers.
Gorda,
they wheezed, dry voices cracking over the vox.
You abandoned the Legion.
Even the dead accused him. He railed back at them, cursing, frothing, spitting, corrosive saliva sprayed from his fanged maw.
The Legion abandoned us! I will make them remember the fallen.
The lead figure bore the crest of a captain. Holes glared emptily where eye lenses had once shone clean and blue.
Death will free you of delusion, the Revenant breathed.
And of self-pity,
wheezed one of the others.
You run from duty.
The captain pointed at him with a shaking, rattling hand.
You run from what the Legion asked of you.
And you call it courage.
Yet another corpse staggered closer, its head angled wrong on a broken neck.
You run, but call it courage.
You cower, but name it virtue.
You betray, but name it justice.
Cortle roared at the advancing remnants, more spit flying from his teeth than the black snake that had been his tongue. The change should have come easier now that Nerkulum was awake, melding his body flawlessly into its divine form. And yet he felt the demon's sluggishness drag against his muscles, a lactic burn resisting his every effort.
Stop fighting me,
he sent within, in a convulsion of panic. His wings beat in futility as bones shifted and slid beneath his skin.
You are a weak host.
Nerkulum's voice was as sharp and nasty as the pain of his straining muscles.
And now we see how the game ends.
The first of the dead word-bearers made a graceless lunge for his throat, corroded fingers breaking against his armoured gorget. Cortle killed the thing in reply, smashing it to the ground with a bone claw and grinding its helm beneath his boot. They marched through the dust, some staggering, some managing to make a stumble into something resembling a run. Cortle's bolter kicked and boomed, slamming explosive shells into the closest figures. The word-bearers burst and shattered, falling into the dust, naming him a traitor even as they dropped in withered ruin. It made no difference. Their hands rose from the ground, trailing dust as they clawed over his boots and greaves. Sparks flew from scraping fingertips. They came on in a choking, gasping tide. Cortle turned, took three running steps to shoulder barge his way through the husks blocking his path, and launched skyward with another roar. This one sounded dangerously close to a cry for help. He crashed back into the dirt, colliding hard with the debris miring the ground. His helm struck rockcrete, painting it red, and a lance of cold metal rebar pounded through his collar, leaving him choking on rusted metal, gagging for air that would not come. Any scream he would have voiced in shame was stolen by the iron impaling his throat. The only sounds he made were gurgling grunts as he jerked his head back, trying to wrench himself from his impaling. The fire in his wings started a second later, as his nervous system caught up with the reason he had fallen from the sky. One of the dead warriors had cut a wing clean from his back. Cortle could hear the insectile buzz of an active power sword. He knew no fear. He knew no fear. He knew no fear.
Wait!
He growled from a blood-bubbling throat. The iron-on-bone grind of pulling himself free felt worse than the smacking kick of impact.
Wait! Such a weak host, the demon said again. Destined for treachery. Your resolve will break. Must I be strong for both of us?
Nerkulum!
In that moment, He was swallowed somehow inside his own mind. He felt it as a compacting of sorts, an enclosing.
You betray your brothers, and now you would beg me for succour. You are more maggot than man, Jeredi Cortle of the 17th. Not a warrior, but a worm. I have no desire to be bound within such a feeble vessel.
Cortle screamed with no mouth and cried out with no voice. He was still trying to shriek when the walking dead fastened their rusted fingers upon his armour plating and pulled him down into the blackness. Jeredi Cortle never stood back up. Argal Tal waited with the body for almost an hour, pacing the ornate chamber with his weapon sheathed, arms folded across his breastplate. His bootsteps sent tremors along the deck grating. The servitors were too mind-locked to pay him any heed, and the chanting thralls too lost in their fever-dream vision quests. But a few of the robe menials flinched back when the Crimson Lord glanced in their direction. The word-bearer had nothing of anger or irritation upon his features, but since Istvan he had noticed few humans could stand to look into his eyes. They sensed the demon within his body, lurking behind his gaze, and his second soul fed upon their fear. It could have been the same with Cortle. It should have been. But Sergeant Jeredi Cortle remained dead on the deck. Not without regret, Argal Tal nudged the body with his boot.
"He's dead," said a gentle voice from the chamber's doorway.
Too gentle to be mistaken for human, yet too resonant ever to be called weak. Argal Tal turned to the unexpected intruder, lowering his head in reverence the moment he caught sight of the filigreed red ceramite armour.
"Truly dead, that is."
"My lord, I cannot do this."
Lorgar Aurelian, Primarch of the Word-Bearers, rested a fatherly hand upon his son's shoulder. The last time Argal Tal had seen him, that scholarly, reserved, gold-inked face had been decorated in the blood-speckling of 100 dead Raven Guard. Now it was warmed by a patient smile.
"You have walked the roads of heaven and hell, my son. You can do anything. What troubles you?"
Argal Tal nodded down at Quartle's slain form.
"They keep dying, father."
"So this is not the first?"
Despite himself, Argal Tal gave a rueful little smile.
"No, this is the 13th.
"I see."
Lorgar lowered himself into a crouch, his black cloak trailing over the decking. With delicate care, he closed Quartle's staring eyes.
"How many have lived?"
3, admitted Argal Tal.
"The demons are rejecting them as hosts," Lorgar postulated,
rising to his feet again to tower above his son. Argal Tal nodded again.
"Physicality alone is not tempting enough for them to incarnate. They desire strong vessels to enter into symbiosis. Cortle babbled as he died, speaking of Kalth, prophesying nonsense through the blood running between his teeth."
That raised Lorgar's immaculate eyebrow and brought a shine to the edges of his tawny eyes.
"He saw one of the many paths of the future?"
Argal Tal could only shrug.
"I believe so. It seems to be how the demons test their hosts, letting glimpses of the future unwind and judging the warriors' reactions."
Lorgar was silent for several moments, his armoured fingers tapping on the skin-bound book chained to his hip. The stretched, cured faces stared at Argal Tal in eyeless, slack horror.
"Perhaps it is a blessing that Sergeant Cortle died. It seems that he may have made some foolish choices in the future."
Argal Tal drew breath to agree, then pulled up short.
"Father," he said, "I can't do this."
"You are already doing it. Give me 3 Galvorback for every 13 dead, my son, and I will thank you until the stars themselves die as icy cores in the void. We are demanding more than any legionary has ever been forced to bear. Let us not weep at the weaklings falling by the wayside.
Argyltal fell silent, looking down at the corpse. He had been sure of Cortal. Cortal, who had no mundane military ambition beyond pride in his prowess. Cortal, who had slaughtered countless dozens of Raven Guard on the killing fields. Cortal, who had knelt in prayer, scourging his flesh for not killing enough, chanting amongst the dead in the hours after Istvan. He had had palpable humanity beneath the iron of his faith, beneath the ceramite of his legion. Not in the sense of a humane soul or the capacity for mercy. Cortal was far past such weakness. It was merely that he possessed a measure of human foundation at his heart, and Argyltal had hoped that it would appeal to the Neverborn, to mesh into symbiosis with such a spirit. A brutal warrior that had never known defeat with a vulnerable soul. What better fodder for the children of the gods?
I wonder what he saw, Lorgar mused.
One of the survivors saw Kalth, a war in the tunnels beneath the surface. Another saw the night we stood chastised before the Emperor. The other claims that he saw nothing at all, and I allowed him that one white lie, given what I'd made him endure.
Lorgar chuckled at that. I suppose they will all see what every prophet sees. Lies and metaphors, hopes and promises, all seeded with the ghosts of truth. Such is the way of all prophecy.
Argyltal could not disagree with that. He gestured to a pack of cowled menials. Arrange for lifter servitors to remove this body, or drag it yourself if you can muster the strength between you. His dual voices held a dissonant harmony, almost meshing but never quite becoming one. Take it to the apothecarian for gene seed removal, and have the rest incinerated. They approached, bowing, scraping, whispering a stream of mumbled reverence in Lorgar's direction, without raising their eyes.
Do not look amongst the ranks of our best warriors, Lorgar said, once the thralls were gone, with the corpse dragged away between them. That's where you're going wrong.
Argyltal looked up at his father, lost by the words.
I don't understand.
I want 2,000 of these demon-souled warriors, my son. 2,000 before we reach Kalth 1 year from now.
2,000? 2,000? Argyltal gaped.
Lord Aurelian, I can't...
You can.
Lorgar's eyes were flint.
I do not want our best warriors to be thrown at Kalth. We will need the strongest and finest chapters to reeve our way through the rest of Ultramar. Do not use our best blood for this game, Argyltal. Use the ones that loathe the Ultramarines beyond balance, beyond reason, beyond sanity. Let the demons come, drawn by the hatred in the hearts of wrathful men. Emotion attracts them as much as devotion. Remember that.
Practically half the Legion still prays for the 13th's annihilation, my lord.
Exactly, Lorgar nodded. Use that emotion. Use them. We can perfect the process later, before we begin whoring our best warrior souls away.
Understanding dawned in Argyltal's mind. You do not want warriors that know no fear. You want warriors that know no forgiveness.
Delightfully phrased. Lorgar finally smiled, and true to the last word.
The Primarch turned to leave, but hesitated. Ripples waved their way down his sable cloak.
The entity that judged Cortal an unfit host. What was its name?
Nurkulum, sire. Why do you ask? Lorgar waved away his son's concerned tone.
"Because I can hear the creature laughing in the warp song, and this chamber still rings with the echoes of its power. That makes me curious, Argyltal. Butcher one of the injured men in the Apothecarian, and bind him into a dreadnought shell. I want to see if Nurkulum can be enticed with stronger bait."
Argyltal, to his credit, needed several moments before he committed himself another step further along the road to his own damnation.
"It will be done, my lord."
"If you need me."
The Primarch turned away.
"I will be on the Conqueror with my brother."
Message number 33141578.883. Authenticated. Alcaeus F, Captain, 13th Legion. Received as narrowbeam data packet at Viridian Mandeville Relay Station, Tertius, on 785.4007.M31 via Sofan Orbital. Have arrived ahead of schedule. Forward recon elements currently initiating planetfall. Orbital augurs confirm presence of greenskin forces, though numbers are significantly lower than earlier tactical projections. Require confirmation of mission parameters for Gazlak campaign and have received no reply to previous transmissions. Awaiting response.